Hello, this is Charles Shepard of the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, bringing you another chapter of American Stories, the behind-the-scenes look into America's history of art and culture. Today's story is about Andy Warhol, perhaps the most famous and well-known of all American artists. Today, I want to focus on affluent Andy and the effect that stardom had on Andy and his whole world. Andy may have come to New York with barely a nickel, but his talent for unique design soon led him to gross $70,000 a year at a time when the average American salary was less than $6,000. That income enabled Andy to lead a pretty comfortable lifestyle, but it did little to satisfy his insatiable desire to be a star in the world of art and culture. Andy's initial success with his gallery shows validated his pop vision. It was the right time to turn the spotlight of commerciality back onto the corporations and rich collectors and say, "This Campbell's soup can will not cost you 25 cents. It'll in fact cost you $2,500. And people bought it. Andy's rise to fame was helped along spectacularly by already established art world figures like Ivan Karp of Castelli's Gallery, Eleanor Ward of the Stable Gallery, and the premier curator of contemporary art at the time, Henry Gelzeller from the Met. Andy had an innate sense of who was important or who soon would be, and he was constantly on the prowl for the next person who could boost his career. As his fame increased, Andy became increasingly outrageous and exploitive. Although he loathed folk music and hippies, he invited Bob Dylan to be in his movies. When that chemistry didn't work, he brought the even more popular Mick Jagger into the factory for parties and portraits. Leaving the production of his art more to his assistants, Andy focused on promoting it. He began showing up at every club, every opening. Friends joked that Andy would go to the opening of a door. Using his reputation as a fine artist, he turned to making films and producing bands. To get his start in making movies, he befriended established filmmaker Jonas Mekas, who taught him the basics and introduced him to wealthy backers. And in the music world, he latched on to the young Lou Reed's Velvet Underground band and put them on the factory's payroll. These activities greatly expanded Andy's audiences and attracted more collectors. Andy wanted to make stars almost as much as he wanted to attract stars. All this type of thing kept Andy's cash register ringing, but it began to create a chasm between he and the more serious art people who had believed in his creativity long before he began climbing the social ladder. Andy's stature in circles of power and influence had already surpassed the art world's ability to censure him. Andy had already seen through the veil of integrity that masks the true commercial soul of the art world. He illustrated that with a simple response when asked to explain his philosophy. Andy said, "Making money is art, working is art, and good business is the best art." Sudden stomach pains interrupted Andy's work of making art and making money. On Friday, February 20th, 1987, he checked into a New York hospital for a routine gallbladder operation, which went fine. But by Saturday evening, his post-operative condition worsened. On Sunday morning, he died of an unexpected heart attack. In line with his philosophy, he died successful. His estate was worth conservatively over $500 million. Andy had indeed earned more than his 15 minutes of fame. Thank you for joining me, Charles Shepard, for this week's program. Please join me again next week for another episode of American Stories on NIPR.